Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden, and I hope everyone has a good show. Well, here we are in 2014, and I am coming to you live from just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, where it is unseasonably freezing. It's freaking cold out there, let me tell you. It's been a few weeks since I've done a show, and to be honest, I just haven't been feeling the motivated to really do a show. Not much to really talk about. Yeah, we've been getting a lot of back and forth, the same old crap that we hear day in and day out. All the politicians threatening or promising one thing or another. It's just ridiculous. But there has been, of course, the one constant that I always try to watch, and that's financial news. And trying to decipher what's going on in the financial world as a whole and where reality lies in that big picture. Because let's face it, there's a lot of information that comes out, and it's really difficult to tell from one day to the next what the truth is, who's full of crap, who's pushing an agenda. Obviously, everyone's pushing an agenda, but who's telling you the truth? It's really not that difficult to determine who's telling the truth and who's not if you've been following the ball. But that can be tough to do with all the information that we're inundated with, in particular, if you watch any of the brain box that will just suck your brain out and spit it out. So, I'm going to play a little bit of a song here. Just kind of how I feel about the situation. And then we'll get back to the show.
I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I get down the stairs.
not that difficult. I know that since we've got Miss Linda and Mike and Yola and FT, welcome aboard. Thanks for coming in. You know, I know you guys have been listening to me for a while, and I know most of the time I probably don't make a lot of sense because it's difficult to take in all the information from all the various places when we get talking about the economy. And I've always focused on the economy, or I should say, on the monetary system. And it really doesn't matter what the monetary system is or what you might think it is in other countries. What matters is U.S. monetary policy and how we use that policy moving forward on a daily basis. And the reason for that is because the United States enjoys the status of world reserve currency. Now, I've kind of touched on that a couple of times, how that came to pass. But I just wonder, do we really fully comprehend what that means in the grand scheme of things? We, not traveling to Europe, I don't know about you guys, I've never gone, and I really don't have any desire to go. But if we were frequent travelers to Europe and to South and Central America and other countries, we would begin to get a better understanding of what our reserve currency status actually means, not just to us. We are, in fact, the beneficiaries of that policy, but it is detrimental to many other countries and many times goes against their national interests. But they are stuck with it. And there has been a move for some time to move the world away from this standard. And the reason that many countries want to move away from the U.S. dollar standard is pretty obvious, or at least it is to me. And that is that these countries have no control over the market for the U.S. dollar, and they are left purchasing assets, treasury notes from our treasury. They're left buying our debt for no other reason than they have to have it in order to do trade in oil and natural gas and many other commodities that they need. And this really leaves them at a disadvantage. And it's kind of like the mandate for you and I to now purchase health insurance. We really feel kind of helpless over that, that we're mandated by law now to purchase something. Imagine being a nation state that is more or less mandated to purchase something that they don't necessarily want and perhaps from a country that they don't necessarily agree with. Looking forward right now, the United States has been seen as the single largest threat to global stability moving forward. And I think that's accurate because we've now, not just now, we've been in the position for a while of trying to dictate to other countries how they should live their lives, how they should run their economies, how they should run their countries, what kind of policies they should be instituting. And it's pissing off a lot of people around the world, and I can understand why. But all of this creates an even bigger problem. And the bigger problem is that we have inflated a currency bubble worldwide. I've talked about this before. The fact that the majority of the currency in existence, U.S. currency, exists outside of the United States. We know on any given day how many paper dollar notes need to be in the system to provide commerce, inflows and outflows, changing of hands of currency and capital. And it's a pretty small number compared to the overall production that occurs on a daily basis. That number outside the United States is huge. So there are countries out there that are holding our currency in paper form just like you and I do, you know, tens, twenties, hundreds. That in and of itself may not seem like a big deal, but it is. We always hear about the horror stories of countries like China holding $1.7 trillion in U.S. treasuries. But there's never much conversation about U.S. currency held abroad. It will be a big deal. It is a big deal. It will probably be more in the news this year than it has in past years. And I'm going to explain why. The bubble economy, and this is an article from Jay Taylor. If you're interested in reading the entire article, you can find it here. I'm going to put a link up in the chat room. And there goes the link. The title of the article is A Bubble Economy Wobbling Off Its Rails. And so this was written on January 3rd. The December 6, 2013 issue of Elliott Wave Financial Forecast stated the following. With stocks cresting, the wobbling global economy should soon come completely off its rails. Now notice they're talking about the global economy, not just us here in the dear old U.S. of A. The early returns on the holiday shopping season suggest that it may not take long for that to happen. Generally, retail department stores wait until just before Christmas before they panic over disappointing sales. This year, anxiety set in even before Black Friday, as major chains started to discount their wares as early as November 4th, despite widespread deals, more Thanksgiving Day store openings, and an increase in Black Friday weekend traffic, retail spending fell for the first time in at least 7 years. Gas prices are falling and home prices are rising, yet still many shoppers feel pinched. More than two dozen retailers, including Walmart, Target, and Kohl's, lowered their latest profit outlooks because they'll have to offer huge discounts to get shoppers to spend. One retail research expert says the vast majority of consumers are distressed. It's going to be a competitive A market as we've ever seen, says Walmart's chief financial officer. This is the leading edge of the consumer strike that we forecasted in September. Now, one of the reasons that they're talking to Walmart should be obvious, and that's because Walmart is the leading retailer globally. They are the front line at just about the most important income level or spending level there is. You know, I talked previously about the fact that traditionally 70% of our gross domestic production comes from you and I and everybody else going out and buying goods and services. 70%. Right now, we're at a historic low of 67%, which is 3% off of the norm. Now, 3% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about a $14 trillion economy, 3% is a big deal. And it's going to be even bigger. The article goes on, Keynesian economics and monetarist policies have set the table for what Robert Prechter is predicting will be the worst, a worse depression than our grandparents went through in the 30s. And he thinks we are getting very close to a tipping point that will be set off with another stock market crash. Fellow Elliott Wave analyst Dr. Robert McHugh is in agreement, and he also notes that we are now starting to see a cluster of Hindenburg omens, which increase the probability of a stock market crash but do not guarantee one. And what they're talking about with these Hindenburg omens and Elliott Wave theorists, Elliott Wave is a method, an algorithm that they use to look at charts on the stock market, on any kind of stock or commodity, and they use this, and it is very effective, but it's none of it's foolproof. And the Hindenburg omen is a specific configuration in the chart, and they call it a Hindenburg omen because it's usually seen right before a crash. I think everyone, well, not everyone, I think anyone that has a little bit of common sense and has followed the markets to a point that they can at least have a rudimentary understanding of how the market works, even without seeing the Hindenburg omens, if you don't know what it looks like, I think we can take all the available information and recognize that we're in big trouble. The market is growing. We hear it every day that the market is making new highs, new territory. All is great. We're in a recovery. Sit back and enjoy the ride. Problem with that is there's nothing driving the stock market. When I say that, what I mean is there's no increase in the value of these companies or these stocks on the surface. They haven't increased production. They haven't come out with new and exciting innovative technologies that would add value to the stock of that company. Simply, it is a gambling house right now. It's like a roulette wheel, and everybody's playing. And the reason everybody's playing, it's because they have a little extra cash, because they're not spending that cash to purchase new equipment, to build new factories, to hire new employees. They're holding on to that money. Same can be said for the financial sector, the banks. They're holding on to money. And don't think for a moment that banks don't play in the stock market, because they most assuredly do. Now, we heard the other day that the Federal Reserve is going to taper QE program. Big cutback. They are really pulling the reins on this profligate money creation known as QE3. They are going to rein it all the way in from $85 billion a month all the way back to $75 billion a month. But they really don't give you the whole story in talking about that, because what they're not telling you is that at the same time that the Fed is going to decrease its purchase of treasuries, it has given the banks, member banks, you know, those banks that own the Fed, it has given them the incentive, very quietly, to make those Fed Treasury purchases on their own. How would they do this, you may ask? Well, they've entered into an interest rate derivatives swap to the tune of about $12 trillion. Now, one way a bank can hedge itself against an interest rate derivative swap, like what the Fed has done, is to purchase something that, should the interest rates go up, would pay them dividends. That would be, young ladies and gentlemen, treasury bonds. See, if the Fed's move isn't enough to stave off rising return rates or yield rates on the 10-year Treasury bonds and the banks are flush with those bonds, well, then they are going to ride a rising tide of bond yields. It's pretty simple. So it's a shell game. They're telling you with the right hand, look, we're not going to purchase. We're getting out of this. Everything's so good. We're going to cut back $10 billion a month. And with the other hand, they're giving the signal to their banks, their member banks, to go ahead and pick up the slack and buy those $10 billion a month plus. So there's a lot going on there. And I'd like to just kind of give you another little taste. Here's a clip about being slaves to the central bankers. Enjoy it.
So mostly what they do is hold summits. I think that right now the question is, do we all work for central bankers? That's what I want to address to our guest tonight. Is this global governance at last? Is it one world, the central bankers in charge? Jim Urio, you say we've got some downside here, a correction in the markets. Fine. But aren't we all just living and dying for what the central banks do? Aren't we all just counting on the fact that there's a Bernanke put and that we won't go any lower than, say, 5% down from here?
Of course we are, because if we look at the economic data, there's nothing to get excited about in that. So we, you know, yesterday we saw some reluctance for the Bernanke Fed to expand their balance sheets and pump more money in. But the stock market knows that reluctance is totally different than not willing to do it at all. And that's why we saw oil implode and gold trade off heavily, because they're not a protected class. If the stock market starts trading off in the 10 to 15 to 20% area, the chairman's going to come in and throw some stimulus at it. So to answer your question, we are absolutely slaves to central banks, because, and we'd love to be slaves of the economy, but the economic numbers continue to do nothing but trend lower.
Mr. LeCamp, do we work for the central bankers?
We know that.
Mr. LeCamp,
We do. Look, markets are driven by policy now. They're not driven by market forces. They're
right.
Driven by fiscal cliffs. They're driven by central bank proclamations. They're driven by false rumors coming out of the ECB.
Fiat currency
really
that's continually watered down. They continue to water our currency
Absolutely.
Down so the markets go
but
up and we feel good about it.
Yeah, and listen to what the Fed did this weekend. I think they really screwed up here. They said that we're going to do this Operation Twist through the end of the year. In other words, they're going to create uncertainty about what happens after Operation Twist, right at the same time that the fiscal cliff kicks in. Do we really want all that uncertainty?
Jim, but we have to give the Fed a break here, because the Fed realizes that what they're doing is probably going to have very little economic effect. The only real thing that can help is fiscal and policy changes. So the Fed, all they have is rocks and stones left. They're just going to throw them. They know that they're probably not going to do any good as well.
Gentlemen, Jim and Jim.
Isn't that why we know that there's going to be QE3? Isn't that why we know there ultimately will be QE3?
That's what I'm banking on.
I love what you said there, Jim LeCamp, about the idea
so
that...
ultimately there will be.
Jim LeCamp, which Jim? I'm not sure which one said this, but that we're basically beholden to what the central bankers and policymakers do rather than the fundamentals in the economy, because we have not been able to generate real growth without doing one of two things. That is, debasing the currency or borrowing our way to a false prosperity. Jimmy Urio, how do you invest under those circumstances?
What's the question there, Ty?
How do you invest under those circumstances?
Oh, we invest because remember that every central bank in the world, not just us, ultimately have to devalue their currency. So you can't keep, you got to put your money in stuff. Big cap U.S. with good balance sheets, to me, is the world's tallest
Mr. LeCamp, every major country holds gold. That tells me that it's attractive. Is it attractive to you with a watered down currency?
I think it's very attractive, both as a currency and a store of value. I agree with Jim. Ultimately, you're going to want resources, but volatility is going to stay with us. So I think investors need to get used to trimming what they don't like and having their portfolio on rallies and nibbling at what they do like on sell-offs, because these aren't going away. The only good news here is that free markets will fight back. When we see bond riots in Spain and bond riots in Italy, those are free market forces fighting back, and ultimately they'll win because investors ultimately will walk away.
I think I heard him say he likes gold.
He did say that.
I do. Jim, the two Jims, thank you very much. And John, interesting, I was at a conference this week, and one of the most persuasive investors I talked to there said that he felt that what you have to do right now is buy things that are scarce. He said gold was scarce.
Right.
Aggregates are scarce.
So there you go, a little clip. And as you could tell, if you were listening closely to the clip, that was prior to QE3 being implemented, when we were still talking about Operation Twist, when we were all a Twitter about the debt ceiling and the government shutdown and what a travesty that was going to be. So move forward, fast forward the tape, and let's look at the section or segment of Economic Time from when that was recorded to today. What have we seen change in our economy? What big new production has come online that is driving, the stocks and the economy towards new highs? Ladies and gentlemen, there isn't any. The only thing that's driving the economy currently is the status quo, that is, the amount of production that's always going to be there or has always been there day in and day out as people buy the things that they absolutely have to have, and the Fed, the QE, the amount of money that the Federal Reserve Bank is pumping into the economy artificially. Now, look, we can't be foolish and believe that the Fed is buying $85 billion a month in treasuries and all that money is going straight into the economy, because it's simply not. It's going to member banks. It's sitting on their books as reserves. And they're using that as a hedge or a way to leverage buying stocks. They're playing the stock market. I personally think that all the smart money has already gone. And that's why we're seeing trading in the market flat. And if we were paying attention overnight, there's a big problem in Japan. The yen suddenly gained strength and then dropped back. Japan's stock market today had a pretty big drop. And there's a little panic going on. They're in trouble. They're in trouble in Japan. They're in trouble in Italy. They're in trouble in Turkey, Iran, you name it. All of Europe is absolutely in deep trouble. Germany knows it. Germany's not stupid. Germany's about the only viable economy in the EU right now. France is in trouble. They just had some high officials or, corporate heads taken hostage. The union, one of the unions over there, they're going nuts. And it's absolutely crazy. And we look at just to finance the current debt, okay, not just in the United States but globally, you're talking about $7.5 trillion in new bonds, new funding, new funny money is going to have to be created just to service the current debts globally. That's a lot of money, a lot of monopoly money. At some point, guys, it reaches critical mass, and the game is up, and they know it. I mean, these folks aren't stupid, and you're talking globally. This is not just in the U.S., not just in the, in Greece or Italy. It's all over the world. And here's the story I was talking about. Angry French union workers take two bosses hostage. Workers at a tire plant in northern France have taken two managers hostage until Goodyear, the firm that owns the plant and has been trying to shutter it for years, meets the major union demands. Now imagine that. Goodyear has been trying to close this plant down, probably because it's not very damn productive because it's in the French union. As Goodyear winds down operations with the plant almost idle, French labor law requires the company to keep all workers employed, which means many of them don't work more than a couple of hours a day while still getting full salary. Wow, that sounds like an Obama plan to me. The situation is why Titan International's Maurice Taylor blasted that he would be stupid to operate the plant on that basis. I mean, how insane. This is the progressive leftist ideology. What kind of insanity tells a business owner, oh, you can wind down operations of the plant, but you have to keep everybody on the payroll. You got to pay them whether they work or not. That's insane. Absolutely insane. And yet, hey, it's good policy, right? I mean, we got to make sure those unemployment numbers stay within the acceptable realm. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is you could just guarantee them, you know, unemployment benefits for the next foreseeable century or decade or whatever. I mean, isn't that what we're talking about here in this country when we talk about extending the unemployment benefits? Look, stuff happens, but I'm here to tell you that there comes a time when a person who loses their job for whatever reason, whether it's through lack of performance or the company just goes broke, it really doesn't matter why that person lost their job. If you tell that person, I'm going to give you a paycheck every 2 weeks, it won't be equal to what you were making, but it'll be two-thirds of what you were making. Oh, and by the way, you qualify for SNAP benefits program, so we're going to give you a government credit card, and you can go to the grocery store and get all your groceries, and we're going to give you a paycheck. And because your paycheck is below, you know, a certain level, we're going to give you some supplemental income on top of that through the SNAP program. And by the time it's all said and done, when you add in medical benefits, groceries, everything all combined, you have more disposable income than someone that's making $60,000 a year. Where is the incentive, ladies and gentlemen, to get your butt up off the couch and go find a job? There isn't one. When I was growing up, if I wanted money, spending money, pocket money, whatever I wanted money for, I had to get off my backside and go earn it. There was nobody earning that money for me and then bringing that money home and saying, oh, here you go, good little boy, you're such a nice guy, we are going to just hand you some cash. That just doesn't happen. And, you know, I see we got a little chatter in the chat room. I'd invite Mike and Linda. You guys know the number, man. Call in. I'd love to have the discussion with you guys about what's going on and what the possibilities are. Our call-in number is 646-378-0321. Again, that's 646-378-0321. Kind of on a side note, I see that the Supreme Court has issued a stay on a federal judge's ruling in Utah in favor of same-sex marriage. And I think they're just wanting to wait until this other case that is pending plays out and is allowed to be heard before the Supreme Court. Miss Linda, how are you today?
Pretty good. How's it going? Glad to hear your voice again. So hope you guys aren't too freezing. I know the country's like ice cold, except here. The only good
it's
thing
frosty.
About Tommy Four.
It is frosty.
We had 74 degrees today. I'm just like so blessed and so lucky in that sense. There was some snow in southern Indiana, and I typed in the chat room to Bill. I said, too bad you can't put Gore's head inside of a snowdrift. Wouldn't that be fun? Then he could try to get himself out with his stupid hair dryer. There was a thing on Facebook where he was, a cartoon where he was using a blow dryer to melt the polar cap. It was pretty funny.
Well, there was a guy up in Michigan that burned his house down doing that.
Oh, jeez. Yikes.
I think it was Michigan. Yeah, he was using a hairdryer, but
yes.
that was the headline. But when you actually read the story, what he was doing was using one of those kerosene-powered torpedo heaters, and his house is on stilts.
Heaven. Yeah.
And he went upstairs and kind of fell asleep in the recliner like I did Sunday for Mike's show, and he woke up to crackling and popping, and his house burnt down. So.
Oh, no. Wow. So when you're talking about these idiots in the Federal Reserve and everything, and we did a on Sunday show, Mike played the whole clip, but in different, you know, like three different spots of the Federal Reserve system, the scam, and it's crazy what they're doing. And then also we talked about, because I keep reading and reading about the period where Lincoln was doing his little stuff, and then of course the Rothschilds get involved in the Civil War. You know, what they're getting their little fingers into the pie. And I think Russia was involved in England and France at that time in different locations to get their piece of the pie. I mean, it's just unbelievable what they're doing to this the whole globe. But our Federal Reserve System, of course, you know.
You know, I think Miss Terry summed it up on her show Thursday just perfectly. She's absolutely correct. This has been going on since, you know, man was walking upright. That, you know, one person has something the other person desires, mm-hmm. and he's going to figure out a way to get it from him one way or another, come hell or high water. So it's just simply a competition of, you know, I want what you got. And that's always been the case. You know, the Fed, you know, you and I have had the conversation. We know how the events that led up to the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank. And when you look at the panic of 1907 or 1904,
right.
I should say, and that goes back to 1893. It goes back to 1873. What the hell was going on in 1873? We were in the throes of the Reconstruction era.
Yeah.
We had this huge boom going on. Railroads were being built. We're doing a transcontinental railroad. There was so much graft and corruption in Washington, D.C. when we saw the culmination of that British mercantilist system come to fruition in Washington. It was just disgusting when we look at it historically. So it's no surprise,
right?
You know, moving forward from the time of 1845 and Jackson's administration, where he got rid of the daggum bank, we had an era of prosperity from 45 to about 61, and then it all blew up.
Yep.
And
part of the reason
it blew up was the greed of these, you know, it was from the time our Constitution was drafted until 1861, there was this contention, this division of North and South.
Right.
And it was purely economics and control of power in representation in government. It was all about power and money, you know.
Right, exactly, saying. Exactly. And weren't there different factions involved in trying to manipulate all that, including
absolutely.
Lincoln?
You betcha.
Yeah, huge.
You bet. And, you know, I hear these people, and Mike Church actually touched on this on his show this morning, when you hear folks talk about if you and I say something about nullification or secession, immediately people will start yammering about, oh, you want to go back to the days of slavery. And that, as soon as they utter that kind of nonsense, I know they're complete idiots or they're disingenuous or both. And the reason I can say that is because the first secessionist movement in this country was a northern secessionist movement.
Right.
And it had everything to do with cutting off the advantage of slavery. Everything to do with it. Absolutely.
And they were really mean to the poor South guys because didn't they ban certain trade with Europe because they wanted to make them spend all that money from the North to the North for their goods and stuff? It was just horrible. And
yeah.
So
absolutely.
That's what all this crap was about. It wasn't just about slavery. Well, of course, he had to make it about slavery and did the Emancipation Proclamation.
And truly, to say it wasn't about slavery is not 100% accurate. The point is that the purpose behind it, behind the aggression and the war, was not to bring an end to slavery. That was not the purpose of what they were doing. The purpose of what they were doing was to try to put pressure on the South to succumb to economic sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
They did not want the South to be able to be profitable as they had been. You can say that part of that is because the South had slave labor, and that's certainly true. But at the same time, they weren't terribly concerned with the slaves. They were concerned with the money, the profits, where's, you know, follow the money. That's what it was about. So, yeah, slavery did play a part, but not in the way that we like to.
Or what we were told. Yeah.
Right. Not the way we like to portray it as, oh, it was a fight to free the poor black slaves. And that's horse crap, because that's just not what happened.
Well, you know.
It was about the money, honey.
Yeah. Well, this is where we are, because in modern times, when you talked about Germany having some common sense, because when you look at places like Greece, and I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago when Glenn was cruising around because he was coming back from Israel, and so he was in these vicinities, and he thought, well, I'm going to stop here and here and see what's going on. And they just touched down in Greece, and he was talking to the cab drivers and to the people. And he said, what an absolute depressing state of affairs that is. These people are dead inside. They're hopeless. They're shooting up heroin in the street corners. I mean, it's unbelievable. And many are homeless. And this is what this kind of garbage that we're trying to do here does to people and to economies and to societies. So get ready. Isn't that special?
And don't think for a minute that the government gives two craps about you, me, or anyone else.
Oh, no.
You know.
And Mikey played Josie's deal that you sent us. it was great, and boy, she nailed it. These sons of bees—they don't give a rat's behind. And it's time we started not paying any attention to them and start living the way we want to be free. I mean, because if we
don't, you know what's interesting to me, and I've seen this play out now two times in the last month. If you look at the progressive ideology in perfect synchronicity, it's working. Mm-hmm. It's working the way they envision. There are two places on this planet that I can think of that fill that description. One is San Francisco, and the other is New York City. You laugh, but the two reports that I've seen in the last month are talking about the price of living in those two locations.
Right.
And how it's driving out the low and middle class people because it's just too damned expensive to live there. So what you have is the bourgeois class, if you will, living high on the hog in New York and San Francisco. And then you would think, if you're watching, you know, MSNBC and all those, you would think that all of those evil, rotten bourgeois folks are Republicans, and you would be wrong.
Exactly.
Because they are, by and large, Democrats. With the exception of that jackass, Peter King.
Aggressive.
Oh, I know. I mean, the fact that he's a Republican from New York is laughable.
God.
I mean, it's just laughable. And somebody needs to just give that guy a Colombian necktie. And we're going to bring on my good buddy, Mike. Mikey, how you doing, sir?
Just fine, Ron. How are you? Hey, Linda, what's up?
Hey.
And I'm doing good, and I'm going to pick up Robert here, too. And, Mike, I want to apologize to you. I was looking forward to coming in on the show, and I sat down in my recliner waiting for the time to come up, and I just flat zonked out.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened, bro. I saw you online. I said, oh, great. And then right before the show started, you were gone. I'm like, what happened?
I sat back in that recliner, and, dude, I was out.
No more recliners for you when my show comes.
That's what happens when I have two beers and I lay back in the recliner, man. I'm like my old granddad, you know, just sawing logs.
Oh, dear. Well, we can't have any of that. So, you know, I'm listening, of course, to what you're saying. And here's another factor, though, that has to be addressed.
Sure,
and
come on.
People are asking, and Linda just asked in the chat room, when do you think this will blow up? And, you know, people trying to give predictions and all that good stuff. But here's, to me, even more of a reason why all this has to blow up. All of this has to end. And the two biggest reasons has to do with the young people, and that is the highest unemployment rate in this nation is between the ages of 18 and 26. And we have more homeless college graduates than we've ever had since, I guess, they've been taking this data. And what makes this even more alarming is that these are our future home buyers. Now, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, but let's just take a year span. Let's take from like 1960 to 2000, would you agree or do not agree that the most people that became millionaires or set for retirement were your homeowners? Does that make sense?
Sure.
Right. And the reason being was that if you bought your home in 1965 for $20,000 and you sold it in 1995 for $400,000, you were able to retire to Boca Raton. Well, here's the thing. Like you mentioned that home values are plummeting. Well, if you bought your home in 1980 for $400,000, and now you think you're going to have a buyer's market, let's say in 2020, well, where's that buyer's market going to come from? It's not going to come from the people that are most employed right now in 2014, and that's, I think, between ages, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's between 35 and 60. Well, we're going to be retiring, folks. We're not interested in buying a home and taking a 30-year mortgage on your now probably $300,000 home, maybe.
Yep.
So who's going to buy your house? I mean, you can list your home for anything you want. But your home or your sock or your underwear is only worth what someone is willing to give. And if you don't have buyers, guess what? You're not retiring to Boca Raton.
Well, you know, and you make a really good point, because starter homes, what we would consider starter homes, you know, are even today in most places where the economy is doing it remotely okay, you know, the like Georgia, here in the area where I'm at, you know, the average starter home's $100,000. And the people that would be buying those starter homes is the segment of our society that is least employed. And if you look at the chart, if you look at the numbers, and it's absolutely staggering, 99.83% of all new loans in 2013 were in two sectors. You know what those are?
Nope.
No, sir, but you're going to tell us.
Student loans and automobile loans.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's going to be fun.
Think about that. 99.983% of all new loan issuances in the United States in 2013 were student loans and new car loans.
Yeah, well, let's address that.
That's frightening.
You take your student loans, right? Kids are graduating, and on the low end, they're like maybe $20,000-$30,000 if they just went to state or 2 year. Or if they went to, you know, your 4 year accredited, your blah 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 fluff, you're looking at 50, 60, 70, even $100,000 in debt. They get out of college, and unless they've got somebody on the inside, they're not finding a job in their field. they're making lattes or flipping Big Macs, okay? And that's the truth.
Yep.
So when do you think that these 22, 23-year-olds are going to be in a position to buy a home? 20 years from now? Now, how does that help you?
Right. They're already financing one home that they don't get to live in, and that's their student loans.
Well, right.
Oh, and don't forget, they got to have a car.
they have to get around. And these kids are coming out of here. They can't. I mean, you look at CarMax, for instance. You look at the used car. The average prices are 10, 11, 12 grand. Well, if you're in the hole 50, 60, 70, where's the 10 grand coming from to buy your car? Well, you have to take, again, that loan. So now you're 10 more thousand in the hole. Now you have car insurance. We know how car insurance companies pummel the youth. And if mommy and daddy isn't their umbrella, that's another car payment.
Yeah. Oh,
Just do the math.
And let me tell you, Mike, because I work in the automotive industry, I see it on a daily basis. I see these kids come in. They don't have two nickels to rub together. You know, they're clipping every coupon out of the newspaper they can find just to get a damn oil change on their car. And they come in, and they're driving a 2008 or 2009 car. The tires are bald. They got steel cords showing. You know, their brake light bulb is burned out. And they can't afford anything but a damn oil change. And they're driving sometimes 30, 40 miles a day one way to get back and forth to school and work a job at McDonald's or wherever. I feel sorry for these kids, you know, and they're at least trying. But, man, the deck is completely stacked against them at this point. Completely. Not that it wasn't stacked against us when we were younger, too, but, you know, and you made it through.
Well, not really. I mean, when I was a teenager, it was easy. You went into a supermarket. They said, well, when can you start? Oh, I can start tomorrow. Right on the schedule. It was easy.
Yeah,
when I was
true.
When I was in college, then I moved up. I got a job at the Bank of New York. In the computer room.
The Bank of New York, man. You're up there working for Alexander Hamilton's folks.
Yeah, well, indeed. And, you know, I was working there part-time. In the last, 2 years of my college, and it was always at the wrong time because it was always at the back end of the semester, they said, Mike, you want to go full-time? We'll pay the rest of your college. And I had to keep turning them down because, I said, why do you keep asking me when I've only got 6 weeks left of this semester? No, I can't. I'm not going to throw away another 3 months. And then when I graduated, I think the ceremony was a Friday or a Saturday, what have you. That Monday, I'm a full-time employee. I buy a new sports car, a Pontiac Fiero, right? I get married maybe a year and a half later. I buy my first apartment outside of New York City. I mean, it was easy. Everybody I knew worked. You had to be a total – you had to have not wanted to work to be unemployed. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Now, Mike, I can't let you get away with calling a Pontiac Fiero a sports car. Okay.
Well, Ron,
sorry, it was
a great two-seater. I loved it. It hugged the road. It hugged the turns. I loved that little car. So there, man.
Well, I see we've got Mr. Robert on the line. How are you doing, Mr. Robert?
Oh, 6 days into the new year. I'm doing okay. How you guys doing? Great.
Not too bad.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I don't know why it's so happy, but happy anyways.
Well, you know, I've got a story that I'm betting you guys haven't heard. And it might make you smile. You remember the thing about the Bundesbank in Germany wanting to repatriate Germany's gold?
Yeah. German model.
Okay, so let's think this through for a moment. Let's imagine, what does that gold look like? You know, Germany delivers it, it ends up at the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Reckon it's probably in the form of gold bars, right? And you would think that, you know, being that they're solid gold bars, they're highly marked. They have serial numbers stamped in them. They have marks from the assayers touting their purity. They have some other marks on the bars to let you know their origin, you know, the purity level, the weight and the date and that kind of thing, right? I mean, it's all pretty straightforward. There's numbers that identify all of these bars. So Germany feels pretty secure that once they go in the vault, you know, they're there for safekeeping. Now, all these many years later, they decide, hey, we'd like to get our gold back. We're going to take it out of the vaults. And we really appreciate you guys keeping a hold of that. Now, 37 tons of gold has been repatriated back into Germany, the Bundesbank. But there's something unusual, and this hasn't made mainstream yet. Okay? What's unusual is that for some reason the Federal Reserve Bank of New York said, oh, no problem. We're gonna melt down the bars and recast them, and then we'll send them over to Germany.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, as it turns out, the bars, the 37 tons that end up in Germany, were what are called coin melt, meaning that they're 90%, not 0.999%. And the only coin melt that we know of that was in existence in the United States was supposed to be at Fort Knox, 6,900 tons. So we're saying, now wait a minute. There is not a single report in the history of the United States of America where a single bar of that gold has left Fort Knox and would justify it ending up at the Federal Reserve Bank. Where did they come up with this gold melt? How is this possible? Where did this come from? There are some questions going to be asked about this, and you can rest assured there will be zero answers forthcoming, or at least any substantive answers.
I need to ask you a question, Ron.
Sure.
What's this information I've been hearing for the past weekend about bitcoins?
Well, depends on what information you're hearing about bitcoins. I think it's a highly speculative.
That's going to be the new currency of people. Instead of using the dollar bill, they're going to be using bitcoins. Instead of the dollar bill now, supposedly.
Well,
that's what
I don't see that being a possibility, at least not in its current iteration. And the reason I say that is because Bitcoin is, it's really not trackable by the government entities. It's difficult for the government to track them.
That's the key word. That's why they're using it.
That does not mean that the government cannot intervene, or otherwise steal your Bitcoin, and they have. They've done that already in more than one instance. The whole Bitcoin thing to me is just a bit suspect, okay? I understand the concept. I wish I had not been so skeptical early on, because I've followed Bitcoin from just about its inception. And I wish to God I'd have done what I thought about getting, just putting $1,000 in Bitcoin back when they were first starting. Had I done that, I'd be a multimillionaire today and I could have retired.
Wow.
Because you can buy Bitcoin for less than a buck back then, or right at a buck.
Yeah, right now it's standing at over $1,000.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know.
No,
the
I have
last
it here. I just looked at it right now. I've got it here at 1,016.
Okay. I saw it was like yesterday morning or something, and it had dropped way down and then rebounded back up to $800 or $900, but it was climbing back up. Another company just said yes, they're going to accept Bitcoin. Zlag or some such crazy Zygo or something, I don't know. You know, one of these deals like Amazon or whatever. So, I mean, it does have viability. But I just something about it just yeah. doesn't sit right with me. I just can't, you know, I can't put my finger on it, but I don't trust anybody, least of all the federal government, but I damn sure also don't trust somebody that is telling me this is how you get around that. I'm just not trusting it. And I think that if we look at the bigger picture...
Well, I don't think you can get around it, Ron, because when you want to... If you want to get around to exchanging it for currency, you'd have to show profit.
Hmm.
So you'd have to pay tax on that, I would imagine.
Well, that's actually not true, Mike. Okay, and here's why. I'll try and explain this. And this is there's a guy Franklin Sanders up in Tennessee that fought the government on the very similar grounds. And they were claiming he made a profit, and he just told them, you know, you're full of crap. I didn't make a profit. If you take a $100 bill into the bank and they give you 5 20s, have you made a profit?
No.
No.
Okay. If you take a $100 bill and you go down to Mexico and you exchange it for, you know, what is it, 1,300 pesos, have you made a profit? No, of course not. It's an exchange rate. So if you're exchanging Bitcoin into dollars, it's just a currency exchange. You're just exchanging from one currency to another. How can you claim there's a profit being made?
Well, because when you get into the mining of it, let's say you put 1,000 in, and then if you wind up being valued at 4,000. Did you make a profit of 3?
No. It's the currency exchange rate has changed. It's simply a change in the exchange rate of the currency. It's still dollar in, dollar out, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, it would be like going, like when I was in Japan and the exchange rate fluctuated from maybe month
right.
to month at that time.
Right.
Yeah. The end. Okay.
Yeah, you can't call that a profit. I mean, they are. They're trying real hard to call it a profit.
Oh, yeah, man. You know that.
Because you're getting out more than you put in. But the other side of that is when you're doing the currency exchange, when you're exchanging into Bitcoin, who's recording that transaction? Because I guarantee you Bitcoin's not.
Wow.
Who's paying? Here's the thing. They don't know. If you put in $1,000 in Bitcoin, and 6 months later, you're pulling out $10,000 in Bitcoins, where did the profit come from? How did it increase? They have no way of tracking or tracing that. So the only thing they can track or trace is a currency exchange, 10,000 Bitcoins for, you know, $1 million. That's the frickin' exchange rate. How you got to 10,000? They got no clue.
Well, wouldn't that be the same?
It's all untrackable.
Well, wouldn't that be the same for gold then? I mean,
would it
be the same principle?
Well, sure. If I go down, if I buy bullion and I buy it under $10,000 amount, and I buy it for $20 an ounce and I sell it for $30, the only person involved that could possibly claim that there was a profit would be me. And I'd have to tell on myself. That'd be pretty damn stupid, if you ask me.
Indeed.
Okay. And that's why when Franklin Sanders, when he got out of the military and he started his currency exchange, he only dealt in 64 and older silver coins. So he was exchanging U.S. currency for U.S. currency.
What was the reason for that, Ron? Why
well, because all the 64 and earlier U.S. coinage in dimes, quarters, half dollars, and silver dollars were 90% silver.
Wow.
So he was doing an exchange, right, and earning a return. But again, the government came to him, and they fussed, and they raised hell, and he's like, hey, guys, it's just, it's no different than walking into a bank and getting change for a 20. You know, it's just a, it's a simple currency exchange transaction. There's no reporting. There's nothing to report.
Right.
They finally won. But,
so
I mean, truly.
What else could the government take away from us? They take it away everything. That, you know, they take it
they can
away,
take so. Away whatever
that's
they want,
right.
Robert.
That's
look,
right.
They have whatever. They have the means. They have the means and the ability to take anything and everything up to and including your life.
Yep. They're evil.
The only reason they don't take your life and everyone else's is because that would be killing the host. See?
That lo-
be killing
the
goose that's laying the golden eggs.
At
so
the feet of
why
the
would
treasury.
You do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You keep yeah. them just miserable enough that they understand that they're under your complete and total control. And you get some uppity like me who thinks, you know, I'll show them, and they'll say, yeah, we'll show you.
That's right.
All the rest of it doesn't matter. They own your butt.
We can't fight no more.
No, I didn't say that. I think it's imperative that we fight. We just have to pick our battles.
Right.
But I think,
so
you know, Mike.
Which battle now besides health care is done for me, so I can't fight that anymore. So I'm basically
well, I still think to this day that the monetary battle is the one we have to fight because that's where the power comes from. That's
mm-hmm.
where the enabling comes from. And you
right.
know what? No matter what we do, okay, from a monetary standpoint, they are already screwed because the system is designed to implode. At some point,
right.
it reaches critical
yeah.
mass. It depends.
Yeah.
It demands continual debt expansion
mm-hmm.
to continue. And we're reaching that critical mass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why you'll never hear these clowns on either side of the two piles, as our friend Bill calls them. They will never really talk about the penny plan or paying off debt or any of these things or balancing a budget because they know they can't. And they know this game. That's why they kick it down the road because they just don't want this to implode on their watch while they're still sitting in that seat.
And let's look at the penny plan and some of those others. You and I both know that's nothing more than an appeasement plan.
Right.
It's a way to make it look like you're doing something.
Yeah.
Actually, you ain't doing crap.
It's the appearance.
It's window dressing, but the emperor
the
still
mandrake.
Has no clothes. And
I
Mike
know.
Is absolutely correct. When you look at this segment of our society that the future is resting on,
mm-hmm.
it's a black hole.
Oh, my
there's
God.
Nothing,
and that's
there's
why it's
nothing
game
there.
Over.
There's
and that's
nothing
why it's
there.
Game over. So when people fight about it, when they say it's not true and blah, 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 and they want to give counter statistics or counter whatever, you cannot deny the two-ton or whatever elephant in the room. You cannot
right.
deny the fact
right.
that the eventuality and is we're going to get older, we're going to die off, and the people under us are grossly under or unemployed, still living at home with mom, or a bunch of guys like an extension of the fraternity, or, in worst case scenario, they're homeless.
Well,
so,
and the other side of that, and there's another side of that, Mike. Look at what I don't know what generation we would want to nickname them, you know, Generation F'd.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that's
I
a
mean,
good
you
one.
Know, seriously. But what are they qualified to do? What are their skill sets?
Really?
Other than holding some liberal arts degree from some meaningless freaking, you know, university somewhere.
They'll be flipping burgers for the Chinese.
Well, truth, you don't have, but where are the students that are coming out that didn't go to, you know, the University of Phoenix or some other deal and get some BS degree instead of
mm-hmm.
going to a trade school
Right.
You know, I mean, honestly, I see it in my industry. Never in my entire life has there been a point in time where you can't find qualified automotive technicians. All the ones that are qualified are my age or older, and they've already got a job, and they're not leaving.
Yeah, well, I can answer right. that. Well, I can answer that. High schools, by and large, have turned off all their shop classes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now this goes back to Common Core coming in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. and the dumbing down of education. Everybody is being groomed to be social workers, and that's
yeah.
the truth. And that's the
or
truth.
Or some cog in a wheel.
So,
yeah.
So in high school and below in middle school, all the shops have been closed. So no one's pushing trade. No one's pushing manufacturing. And quite honestly,
yep.
Ron and everyone, why should they? All the jobs are going to China. They're not staying here. They're going. So, you know, the handwriting's on the wall. So that's why you don't have skilled tradesmen anymore, because no one's pushing that. That's not on the educational agenda. Socialism.
Yep. I agree, and I really believe, I mean, if you just sit back and look at the myriad of stories out there about what's going on in the economy, China's role in what's going on behind the scenes, look at who's buying up gold, all right? I mean, let's just be honest here for a minute. And look at, you know, everything in the West, here in the U.S., we've heard for the last decade on that gold's a relic. It's a barbaric relic that, you know, it's really not money. That central banks, the only reason they even hold it is primarily just tradition, according to Bernanke. Not that the central bank is actually holding any damn gold. Obviously, if they're using coin melt to produce bars to send to Germany to repatriate the 150 tons of gold that we owe them, that's supposed to be theirs, that's supposed to be in storage, why would you remelt those bars to send them? Why wouldn't you just ship them their bars? Well, the answer is real simple. You don't frickin' have them. That's why. You don't possess them. And so you have to scramble and figure out a way to get them something that looks like it should be their bars when, in fact, it's not. Meanwhile, you go to China, and China is telling its society, you should own gold. Buy gold. It's a good investment.
It fell down. Fell down.
Know how to put it back.
And they are absolutely buying. You're talking about people that will go to the market. They will ride 1,000 miles to go to Beijing or, you know, one of the big cities, and go into the gold store, and they will spend a month's salary to buy a necklace, a gold necklace, because they know that no matter what happens, it's in their hand. They're holding on to it. When you couple that with all of the things that have been going on behind the scenes, with China trying to move to dethrone the U.S. as the reserve currency, I just don't see how you get around the fact that we're definitely headed for a reset. We've talked about that before, and I think the reset is going to be a gold standard, and that's what China's really pushing for.
Well, that's how it should be. I mean, let's be honest. It should be based on gold. It's the universal currency, and it's real. This other crap that we're doing, it has to implode. It just has to, and it will when, well, who knows? They could keep this afloat, you know, as long as they possibly can, but even
right.
they can't keep this going on forever. They just can't.
Oh, and they know that, and that's why I said, you know, at the beginning of this, this is why you have a Congress that has operated for 5-6 years now with no budget. They don't have to have a budget. It doesn't
right.
matter how much they deficit spend, and they know it. It just doesn't matter. They can spend. The sky is the limit. It does not matter. The problem is, if you admit that openly in public,
right?
There's a run at the bank.
Well, not so much that, but then it becomes patently obvious to even the dumbest taxpayer out there. Well, if you can just borrow to spend, then why are you taxing me?
That's right.
Why are you stealing my money if you can just print it up on your own? I mean,
right.
You know, and you look at it, and this is one of the questions I ask the leftists when they start clamoring about, you know, money and taxation and whatnot. And I said, well, what do you need all this tax money for? Why do you have to steal half of what I earn every year? Well, you have to fund the government somehow. And I said, well, you mean to tell me that Congress only spends the amount they collect in taxes? Well, no, of course not. Exactly. Look at your $17.6 trillion deficit or national debt, and that tells you the story. See? I mean, they collected $2.5 trillion in taxes, and they spent $3.5 trillion. Where'd they get the other $1 trillion from? Not that $1 trillion is a drop in the bucket. It's not. But I mean, let's be honest. They do not need money out of your paycheck to keep playing this
right.
game. The only reason that they collect that money is to make sure that you know they own you.
And to keep you poor.
It's
sure.
Because if you're financially free, you're free all the way. You're independent.
You betcha.
And they don't want that. That's a bad
look at what's going on out in California and in Texas, where you have people that have property, they are completely off the grid, and you've got the government, the county, coming in with SWAT teams and telling them they can't live on their property anymore.
Yeah.
That they have to destroy all their possessions and move off their property. What kind of insanity is this? Seriously. And, you know, there's not going to be a revolt. People just aren't going to revolt. If you want to see a revolt, if you want to see an armed uprising in this country, yeah, close down the SNAP program.
Well, there you go.
You will see riots.
Right.
You will see a revolt. But as far as the folks, you know, like me and you, we're not. It's not in us to just, you know, do something like that. It's just not.
And that's why, you know, to transition into another government, there's no way it could be bloodless. There's no way. And when it does hit a crescendo with all these young people that are homeless and totally in debt, and when no one can sell their homes, and the homes aren't worth jack because there isn't a buyer's market, it's going to get bloody just to get food. I mean, people are going to be killing each other just to eat. So for people to think that we could have a transition that's bloodless is just so naive and blind. It's just ridiculous. It's inevitable.
Oh, I certainly agree with that, Mikey. I absolutely agree with that. I think that if we had the fortitude, we could shut this down tomorrow. But it would require people saying, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to work. I'm not paying my house. I'm not paying any more bills. No, I'm on strike. I'm going to sit at home and, you know, just not going to happen. I'm just going to sit at home. And you don't have enough sheriff's deputies to evict everybody.
That's right. They don't. Even with their
stupid
CHS. So
now what
are
you
going
to do? Because truly, depriving the government of revenue is not the goal. Think about that. Who needs to be deprived of their streams of revenue? It's the people that are running monetary policy. See, they've built this whole system, and we know it's an upside-down pyramid.
Right.
And we're at the bottom point of that upside-down pyramid. But it doesn't mean that we can't have an impact. They made the rules. We didn't. And if everybody stopped capitulating, if everyone stopped consenting, the whole damn thing would collapse within a week. There wouldn't be enough. You couldn't create enough money in bailouts to bail it out if everybody just said, you know what? I'm done with you guys. I'm done playing your game. Piss on you. You want your property,
Ron,
come take it.
I think that's going to happen eventually. somehow with the meltdown, I think that the ones who are not, the problem is not enough people, but those of us who know what's coming, we're going to be so far off their damn, they're not going to find us. Seriously, that's what's going to happen. People who are aware. Don't ask me how it ends, but that's going to be part of the scenario, I think.
Well, this is why local police forces are getting armed vehicles. This is why they're buying billions of rounds of ammo. This is why they've okayed to have drones fly over our head, and there's going to be like between 10 or 20,000 of them between now and the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, they know it's an eventuality. Why would they arm up like this?
They're prepping big time, Jack.
Oh, indeed. Yep. Indeed. So,
they're absolutely prepping, and we're not, you know, or not all of us are. And I look at people, and I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? And, you know, at the same time, I'm not going to go out and buy a 10-year supply of food and 10 years worth of ammo and all that. That's just pointless. Because truly, at some point, you know, it's like my dad always used to tell me, but, you know, I was a little tough guy growing up, and I'd go out and fight the biggest guy in the neighborhood. It didn't bother me a bit, but Pops told me something, you know, there's always somebody out there that's bigger and badder. Always.
Yep.
There's always
somebody else that's bigger and badder than you are. And so, you know, you go looking for a fight enough times, sooner or later you're going to find that guy. And then you're going to wish you hadn't.
Yeah, but with the food thing, I mean, food rots eventually. So
buying a
10-year supply. But, you know, ammo lasts forever. It's just a matter of hiding it well enough when they all come a-knocking for it, as they're going to do in Connecticut eventually, since everybody was just so eager to register their constitutional right to possession of firearms. They just couldn't wait to register it. And, you know, I'm sure that's going to trickle down all over. Eventually, they're all going to do that.
That's why when you came to visit, the only thing I could really show you was pictures of guns that I used to have, because I lost
my loading. Understood. Accident. Yeah, of course. Well, those things happen, and, you know. What are you going to do?
That's
what are you going to do?
But I can always look at the picture and admire the beautiful guns that I used to own.
Not just that, but you can print them in 3D now. So they got those 3D printers, so... You know, hey,
that might be a little too much like a real gun, and I don't want to get in trouble. So,
well, that's true. I mean, you know, you don't want the neighbors to call in and say, "Ron Golden has a gun." It turns out to be a 3D gun, but so we're gonna have to take you in. Your neighbors are afraid. I mean, this is what's happening out here across the country. Your neighbors are afraid. They saw you with a gun. Oh, you mean my legally? Yeah, it just came from the gun range. So we're gonna have to take that from you. Different one? No, we don't need one. Oh, that's real nice. That's a great country we live in. Great country we live in. I just want to salute the flag right now. You know, I really want to say the Pledge of Allegiance right at this moment and salute a picture of Ronald Reagan. Yeah, they can blow it out their tailpipe.
Exactly. Exactly.
Say that straight up.
Guys, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to go back in the chat room. You guys were wonderful. Don't forget Hoot and Holler, and I'm hoping to have a really cool call-in guest on Wednesday. So,
hey. Let's not forget
what?
The hot seat tomorrow at 6
the
Eastern,
hot seat. Oh,
5 Central,
I'm sorry.
3
I
Pacific.
Forgot your Tuesday
hold on
show.
Now. Yeah, hold on now. Relax.
Yeah. I forgot your Tuesday show. Yeah,
that's
it's just
all right.
Before Hoot and Holler. Got it.
Yes, it is.
Okay, guys. God bless.
I'll try not to overlap if I can.
No worries, Mikey. We appreciate it. Miss Linda, thank you for calling in.
All right.
And I know all the folks out there listening. Want to make sure to tell you to tune in tomorrow night for the Hot Seat at 6 and right here at Patriot Families for the Hoot and Holler show at 7, and then Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for Miss Linda Sills, the young lady that was just on the line with us, for Right from the Left Coast, and then Thursday night at 6 p.m. for Miss Terry Rowland and Patriot Education, and then Sunday night again for Mikey and the Hot Seat.
Damn right, 8 o'clock Eastern.
Absolutely, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Mikey, I hope you're enjoying your stay in Texas. I appreciate you calling in this evening. And I promise
anytime,
you, brother, I did not miss your show on purpose. I really wanted to.
I understand. You got to put your beard down. I want you to have a cup of coffee around 6 p.m. and get energized, brother.
You know, that was honestly probably the first time I went out and had a beer in weeks. And just had two or three beers and came home and talked to you online, sat down in the chair, and I woke up about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
And that was such a shame, man, because I really wanted your input on the, you know, I ran that Mike Maloney thing on the Federal Reserve, and for those of you that missed it, you might want to go back and check it out, because it really gives a great illustration of how phony this entire system is. I mean, this is just mind-blowing.
So and, I have been pushing this since I started on the radio. It's the monetary system. You can fuss about everything else. We can talk about abortion and homos getting married and everything else, but the fact of the matter is it's about the monetary system. And on that note, I'm going to play this little clip, and we'll see you guys tomorrow night.
All right, brother. You
God bless
care.
You, Mikey. Thanks
God
for
bless
calling
you too,
in,
my
sir.
Man. You got
All
it.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Money comes in many shapes and sizes, but does that make sense in a globalized world?
We have a political system which has not kept pace with economic globalization.
In a world where banks fail and governments go bankrupt, can we find ways to stop the cycle of boom and bust?
The global economy needs a global currency.
Today's challenges are global. The solutions require great minds. In this series, we meet the people who are thinking big. Canadian economist Robert Mundell won the Nobel Prize for Economics in 1999. He helped create the euro, Europe's single currency. But he's always had a bigger global vision. Why stop at Europe? Why not a currency for the world?
The world historically has always had a currency to express prices in. There was a global currency based on gold. We don't use gold anymore, but we need a global currency. People speak their own language, but there is one common language for the world to communicate in. If you don't have that common language for the world to communicate in, you're just imagine how many translators in the world you need to have. If there were a world government, one of the first things they would do would be to create a world currency, because there would be a government that would be able to be responsible for it. And that's one of the problems in creating it, that there's no entity, a global entity out there that is a world government.
There is no world government and no world currency. But on the ground, the US dollar has been the dominant reserve currency around the world for decades. Then, in 2008, a crash on Wall Street triggered financial turmoil in the US, followed swiftly by an economic downturn in the rest of the world. The dollar no longer looked such a safe haven. But what would an alternative system look like?